Emily Kinski is a multimedia journalist and documentary filmmaker who works primarily in the Middle East and Central America. She's been spending some time in El Paso and Juarez, and her work focuses on migration and human trafficking. Her work is characterized by a collaborative videography and innovative multimedia. Today, my guest is Emily Kinski. Welcome to State of the Arts.
Thank you.
So, Emily, what attracted you to our border region?
So, I started working in El Paso about a little over a year ago with another filmmaker colleague of mine, Anna Claire Spellman, and we had done a fellowship through the International Women's Media Foundation together down in Honduras. And we went to continue some of the work we were doing down there, which was focused on migration. And as we started looking into some research, we realized that there's a lot of human trafficking that happens down here. And as we looked at it, we realized there's a massive gap in a lot of that reporting in terms of where undocumented women in particular fit into that. And we know, particularly here, a lot of that has to do with labor trafficking because there's not a lot of options. Even if you're waiting for a visa or asylum or something, you're kind of forced into these unstable working conditions. So, yeah, we came down here and we started working on that. And it was kind of with El Paso, everyone we met, they opened a new door for us. And the story just got deeper and more complicated. And we just kind of fell in love with the community, not just for some of these hard things that are happening, but also for a lot of the reasons it's really community-oriented and beautiful as well. And I'm a Midwesterner. I've been living in New York City, but just to be back in a community that was really grounded by family and connection and learning especially about sort of the border history here.
Right.
I mean, I felt like I had a lot to learn, to be honest. I consider myself, you know, relatively educated about migration and current events, but I was really surprised by what I learned down here at the border, and I just kept wanting to learn more. So,
but that's part of what you do and how you do it, right? I mean, the whole thing is, at what point are you done peeling that onion? I mean, do you ever get the complete answer that you're looking for?
No.
Right?
Yeah.
Because it's so complicated. Mm-hmm. So then at what point do you say, okay, this project is wrapped up, let's move on to the next one? Mm-hmm. Or is it easier said than done?
Definitely, it almost, even when my films are published and out in the world, it never kind of felt like I was done.
Right,
you know,
like the story's not over. Yeah. It's still happening.
Normally, at a certain point, I start working on distribution, whether it's going to be more of a journalistic distribution through a publication, or it's going to go a more traditional film route, or maybe independently distributed online. Mm-hmm. And once I kind of start to understand like where a film is going to live, then I kind of start understanding how I'm going to close it out. And at that point, I'm normally working with someone in post-production who can help me decide, okay, I think you've got it. This is enough. Because if it were just up to me and just the way that, you know, documentary nonfiction works is it's never really done.
No,
people
not.
Keep living and the story always gets more complicated. And it also kind of depends on the motivation of the film as well. If it's, you know, has a really strong reporting or investigative tilt, or if it's human interest and character driven, there might be a natural time in someone's life where there something feels like a resolution or a natural closing of a chapter. And so those are kind of cues for me to wrap it up and finish up my visualization and, you know, start thinking like, what's my next story that I'm going to focus on?
How do you get folks to let you in? You know, you were talking a little bit like, oh, now I know how it feels, but we're on the radio. There's not a camera here.
Yeah.
But you do it with a camera in these really complicated, complex ways. How do you get through?
Very slowly. I mean, particularly in a lot of the contexts that I'm working in, whether it's a post-conflict environment or with a lot of the really sensitive things happening at the border right now.
Right.
You just really have to listen to people. And I find that people don't even engage with me at all unless they have some motivation for their story to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of like my first level of consent, is even if they're afraid of being filmed or they have some fears about their identity being publicized in some way,
right.
You know, people don't really respond to me or say like, yeah, hey, come over and we'll talk, unless they have some like motivation internally for why they'd want to be filmed and why they'd want their story broadcast to an audience. And so I kind of start there trying to learn their motivations, particularly in a really sensitive circumstance, like someone who is a victim of trafficking or,
right.
You know, is dealing with some really hard, like they've migrated from their home or something. So, yeah, I try to learn that motivation and then kind of go from there in terms of determining boundaries. in particular, if they have a sensitive immigration status, a lot of times now I'm not showing their identity in terms of visualizing their face or something that, you know, could be recognized by like maybe the town they're from in the case that they were deported or something. Mm. So, yeah, it's just really working with people. And I think sometimes when you start out, particularly as a journalist and you're doing maybe like breaking news or daily news, there's kind of this like aggression, like get the story and get out. And documentary, and particularly the way I've learned to work and that I like to work, is to kind of do the opposite of that, is to really just like wait until it feels comfortable. And I mean, particularly with the internet, you're asking a lot of people these days. And so
that's true.
Yeah. Just slowly, very slowly, and trying to collaborate with people too, like asking them, like, how would you imagine a film of yourself looking? And I think that's a cool way that I think documentary and even journalism, particularly like more like editorialized journalism, is moving, is, you know, to really make sure that people are being represented accurately, not just in terms of truth telling and journalism ethics, but also how they see their identity, not just how you're projecting their identity upon them. So that's something I've been applying a lot to my work in the last couple of years, is really making sure I'm taking the time to understand their motivations and how, you know, they want to be portrayed.
Yeah, because in this time, I mean, stories are fast, right? I mean, the news cycle is just, you were talking about that. I mean, you're in and you're out, you're in and you're out. Mm-hmm. And to actually take time and say, you know what, I'm going to tell a story that's going to create itself, right? So you just have to practice patience and build the relationship with the folks that you're working with.
Right. And it's natural at a certain point. I mean, you kind of know. I mean, trust is something like I can get a yes and a no. I can say, like, is it okay if I film this? Is it okay if I show this? And that's seemingly black and white, but sometimes it's not. You have to look at, like, the power structure, maybe, like, the imbalance of I'm coming in with a camera and the power to broadcast a story. And a lot of times that does create a power imbalance, you know? So I kind of, especially now, just wait. And then, like, you know that moment when someone's, like, trusts you, and then you can kind of,
you're like, okay, we're gonna do this.
Yeah, even like if I, you know, just go through a lot of layers, like if this was seen by your, you know, childhood best friend in the town that you're from, is that okay? And just like really making sure that they fully understand sort of like what they're consenting to.
Out there. Once it's out there, it's out there.
Yeah, exactly.
So what about your journey? Like, how did you decide to become a documentary filmmaker?
Basically by cycling through a lot of other creative career paths first. I studied just communications in college and eventually thought I wanted to combine my visual artistry with business, and I was a graphic designer. And then I graduated in 2009, right after sort of the financial crisis in the U.S. And so, like, you couldn't work for free because in, like, all these marketing agencies, they had just let off, like, half of their staff. And so having, like, a fresh face in there, even unpaid, was really – it was just a hard time in our economy. So I eventually did start working at a startup company in Chicago that was doing sustainable development in Central America. And, you know, because it was a startup environment, I was able to do communications and marketing management and graphic design, writing, photography. – I started, like, directing some video projects there. And it was when I started directing those video projects that I became just really engaged with the medium.
You're like, this is
the medium.
I found it.
And I wasn't doing it myself, but I was just – I loved the way that storytelling comes together with video. And it's sort of like this full sensory experience. Alongside that, I was getting a little disenfranchised with startup culture. It's really intense, and it really prioritizes, like, essentially working yourself to death. And the economy was changing a lot. And I was working in Central America, and an indigenous group in Panama was often protesting and sort of, like, effectively shutting down the entire country.
Wow.
It was because of these land rights issues that have been happening, you know, ever since the Americas were colonized. And I just started thinking a lot about, like, what does sustainable development mean if it's environmentally conscious, but it's not really looking at these, like, larger...
It's still in a fragile place.
Exactly. And there was this one day where I was basically stuck in Panama. I couldn't get through the Pan American Highway to get back to the airport because of these protests. And I saw, like, locally on Facebook that, you know, it was really violent. The police were, like, shooting rubber bullets at children, and there was dead horses along the highway, and
it was just
this really traumatic. Tens of thousands of this community, they're called the Nobe Bugle, were out protesting, and that was like my first experience of trying to get information about something and realizing that like any news that was published was pretty biased against the protesters. And I was like, this is crazy that as a result, a few of the protesters died and you couldn't find any information about it. And something kind of like clicked in me, I think, in part because I was still hadn't found exactly what I wanted to do. I wasn't happy in the job I was working.
Right.
I don't know. It was like something just was ignited within me. So I eventually quit that job and started freelancing, doing startup consulting for marketing and visual media. And then I was like, I'm going to make a documentary about what's going on with these protests. And I flew back to Panama with my best friend and like two little cameras. And
that was it.
We had no idea what we were doing.
Sometimes it's better to do it that way, you know? There's no concept. There's no fear. You got nothing to lose. You just got to make a film, right?
And yeah, that's what we did. And so we were a little bit wayward. We were just like hiking. You know, the terrain is really mountainous. It's jungle. It's like it kicked our butts. And we also didn't know how to be directors. We did know how to do cinematography, but at a more basic level than I'm capable of now. And eventually we kind of, the story told us what to do, basically, where one of the villages we were filming in was about to get flooded after 18 years fighting a hydroelectric dam. And so we did this short video for each home in the village that was going to flood, just kind of documenting their home and their own, their own narrative history, and just kind of let them see what they wanted to say. And so you got all kinds of stories, like from, you know, little old grandmothers telling us these like myths and memories to the younger folks in the community, like really with a political, like activist, you know, narrative. Right. And we just kind of let it all exist. And so you got this really cool mix of these stories. And we were able to partner with some pretty big nonprofit organizations to distribute those films and built sort of like an interactive website around them. And it was actually shown at the Inter-American Court of Human Rights in Washington, D.C. when it was kind of
That's so amazing.
Yeah.
And now here you are on our border.
Yes.
Telling some of our stories. I mean, I love that you get to see the warmth and experience the warmth. And then at the same time, you're working, sharing kind of the darker stories that are happening.
Mm-hmm.
But both are important. And I'm glad that you're seeing both of them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Today, my guest has been multimedia journalist and documentary filmmaker Emily Kinski. Thank you for coming to State of the Arts.
Thank you so much.